Spirit Guide Underground by Tech 2008.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. Begin DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Spirit.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast. I'm Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. Hope you've had a great week. Let's not waste any time and jump into updates.
Update information.
This week, I began mixing on the third and final act of Dark Ritual, so if you're playing along with the home game, we are on pages 43 through 45 out of 66 pages. You know, I might have given you a different page total last time, because when I looked at my page total, this time it was off of the physical script that I have sitting on my desk, and the other time I might have been counting pages on the view version on my computer. They were basically printed or whatever, made with two different programs, so it's the same. It's the same length of material. It's just the pages ended up getting numbered differently, like different size print or font or point size. Is that what you call it? Point size? Yeah. Obviously, I should really be in a career where I'm using computers a lot because I am very technically inclined, right? Okay. All right. We're sneaking up on the final climactic signs of Dark Ritual, and I can't wait to get there. But I'm also determined to make each individual scene special, so we're not rushing in our excitement to get things done. You know, I kind of have a policy for myself when I'm putting together songs for the first Spirit Blade and then also for Dark Ritual to make every song my favorite song, you know, to work on it until I love it so much that I'm like, oh, this is going to be the best song. This is going to be the best song in the whole production, you know. And then I know that I'm pretty close to being done with it. So I'm really trying to make everything as interesting and cool, and even, you know, straightforward scenes have a little twist of something that's interesting for you guys. So hopefully when it's done, everybody's going to be really thrilled with the results. Because I'm not going to finish it until that's the case. Well, obviously I can't. Obviously I can't take a poll and say, okay, can I finish now? Now that you've all heard this, can I be done with it? You know, because then if one person says it sucks, then I have to go back and start all over again, and that would be terrible. So let me just say that I'll finish it when I think it's really cool. I spent 2 days about this week just looking through various royalty-free music that you can purchase online for productions like what I'm doing or other media productions. I did a lot of the scoring for Spirit Blade, but I'm purchasing most of the score this time, which shortens production time and it results in a higher quality product. So if you like the music near the end of our trailer, I think you're going to be pleased with the results in Dark Ritual as well. Okay, now here's something where I would like your feedback on. I put this on the blog this week, so I'll more or less just kind of give you the same text that that you can read on the Spirit Blade Underground weblog. But I had a lengthy conversation with my wife earlier this week about our plans for The Pilgrim's Progress. Now, for those of you who don't know, after Dark Ritual is released, I'm going to immediately begin development on what we're currently calling Similitude of a Dream, based on The Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan. What I'm struggling with is deciding who my audience is for this project. Of course, we're still trying to find much of our audience for Spirit Blade, too, so that shouldn't come as a huge surprise to me. As a small company trying to get noticed, producing an adaptation of The Pilgrim's Progress has several advantages. Number one, it's public domain material, so that means I can basically do whatever I want with it, and I don't have to pay anybody a dime. Two, the outline for the story is already in place, so I don't have to create an entirely new work from scratch, so that hastens production as well. Three, the material presents truth that is scriptural and potentially life-altering. And that's what we always want to be doing when we're producing stuff at Spirit Blade Productions. We want to create stuff that's cool and sci-fi and bizarre and imaginative, and not just ripping off ideas, but creating entirely new, cool, edgy sci-fi concepts. But at the same time, we want to have ideas and concepts and elements of philosophy and scriptural truth, if appropriate, that that's going to, you know, change the way people think. That's going to give them a new perspective and maybe even change the course of their life as a result of processing those truths. And finally, number four, Pilgrim's Progress is a recognizable name, at least to mainstream or more traditional Christians. Christians who may not be so sure about this weird kind of Spirit Blade stuff, you know, or they're not into audio drama, they're like, what, you know? Well, they might be willing to try out a cinematically produced audio version of The Pilgrim's Progress. So the main question in front of me is, how close should I stick to the source material? In the realm of fandom, if you're like me, you know this, straying from the source material can be close to blasphemy. I mean, we've seen plenty of comic book movies that fail for their lack of fidelity to the source material. But in this case, if you've read The Pilgrim's Progress, and I'm talking about the original Pilgrim's Progress, there have been some updates, they've made some little animated things for kiddies in Sunday school and stuff like that, but if you've read John Bunyan's original work, The Pilgrim's Progress, the source material, it's difficult reading for the modern reader. It's archaic sounding, and it only vaguely lends itself to the fantasy genre. It's really heavily, it's not a straightforward fantasy, it's written heavily in the literary style of allegory. So every character is overtly symbolic of something. People have names like Obstinate and Pliable. And guess what they're like? Well, Obstinate is obstinate, and Pliable is a very pliable person, you know? So they behave in direct accordance with their name. So it's really heavy, you know, it's one step beyond symbolism. It is out and out allegory. Now, Progress is meant to be read with an openness to learning life lessons and morality. It's designed for a Christian audience, I believe. But I'm not interested in beating people over the head with super obvious lessons. So my inclination is to change the names, but keep most of the story. I may even go so far as to split the single character, whose name in the book is Christian, and yes, I'm going to change that name too, into a group of people, a sort of adventuring party for the fantasy epic that I hope to create here. However, if I do that, the potential for change becomes dramatic, and while telling a real cool fantasy story, I may stray so far from the source material that it would be misleading to advertise it as based on The Pilgrim's Progress. It may be better to devise my own party-based fantasy later on, and keep this mostly a solo adventure for now. And that's actually where I'm currently leaning, is to just keep it, you know, primarily a story about this main character, and not, because there's already going to be just a ton, if you've read Pilgrim's Progress, there is a ton of characters that he's going to run into. So that's going to be a challenge in and of itself. You know, I don't need to add more characters to the mix. The conflict ultimately comes from wanting to attract two very different groups to this project. Number one, I want to attract the sci-fi, fantasy, action geek like me. Because those are the people that I feel like the church doesn't know how to communicate and resonate with and give truth to. They're just kind of like, boy, we love you, but you're weird, you know, so God bless you, goodbye, you know. But I also want to reach the person who isn't a diehard fantasy fan or audio drama listener. And the reason I want to do that is because, one, I have stuff that I want to say to them, too, that will hopefully allow them to embrace the sci-fi, fantasy, you know, geek community more. And not only that, but they might be people, you know we could be looking at parents or friends or something like that that know someone that that might enjoy something like this. And maybe if they don't know exactly how to speak their language, they can say, hey, this is cool, you know, you want to check this out, you know. Now, I should pause and say that in no way do I ever want any of our products to be substitution for sharing truth one-on-one. I don't think that when we know someone that needs to hear the gospel or needs to hear truth, I don't think the solution is to hand them a product from Spirit Blade Productions or hand them a book by, you know, a philosopher or a theologian or something like that. I think we've got to be on that journey with them on a one-on-one basis. But I think that books and movies and stuff that we're producing can be conversation jump-off points. You can start into conversation after, you know, listening to something that we produce or something like that. So that's one of the reasons I want to get it into the hands of someone that might be a more, I don't want to say traditional, but mainstream Christian, but that knows some people that would dig this, but they're having trouble kind of figuring out how to open up conversation with. So, but to you know, to reach them, you know, you got to, you know, not freak them out. So... or make them think that you worship Satan because you've got some violence, you know, in your product. So, you know, I want to reach those people that, that they don't, they're not a diehard fantasy fan or an audio drama listener, but they'd be willing to take a risk if they saw that the project is based on trusted Christian material, you know. Because until, you know, until they get a sense of us as a company, they have, you know, they're going to be suspicious. They're going to think, oh, are these guys, you know, unsterilized, unsafe, unleashed? Well, do they really believe in the Bible, or are they really Christians, you know, and stuff like that? So I want to give them an opportunity to get their foot in the door and get to know us a little bit and get to know our values a little bit. My hope is that people will be willing to check us out based on our adaptation of Pilgrim's Progress and then stick around for all the original material that we're going to continue to produce in the future. But while I'm doing that, I want to be sure I'm utilizing my creative strengths and still creating a story with the Pilgrim's Progress adaptation that you, our faithful supporters, are going to love and be excited about, and they're totally going to dig just on, just if nothing else, purely on a level of cool, fantasy, epic awesomeness, you know? I'd love to hear any thoughts that you have on this topic, and your prayer support would be very appreciated as I look at making a decision on this sometime in July or August. I already did get one response from Isaac, so I'll share that with you now. He says, "Hey, Peter, I just wanted to say at the beginning here that I loved Spirit Blade and that I'm really looking forward to Dark Ritual. The only problem I can see with you attracting a wide listener base for your new project will be the same thing that took a little getting used to with Spirit Blade, violence. If you're looking for a wide range of people to listen to this, I don't really think that you're going to get it if you have the same level of violence as you did in Spirit Blade. People, when they think of Pilgrim's Progress, they think of a family adventure that is safe for the whole family. This doesn't mean I think you should take all the violence out of your projects. I just think you need to be more careful about it this time around if you want people to listen. Okay, there's my two cents. Again, I want to say that I really enjoyed Spirit Blade, and I hope that you finish Dark Ritual soon. I also want to tell you to keep up the good work over there at Spirit Blade Productions. You have really touched the lives of myself and some of my friends. Thank you." Well, thank you, Isaac. That means a lot to me. In my response to him, I wrote this. Hey, Isaac, thanks for your comments and support. I think you're absolutely right. The plan from the start has been to have a lower level of violence in our adaptation of The Pilgrim's Progress, specifically the wet and sticky kind of violence. There will still be plenty of amped up action, conflict, and combat. It just won't be as messy as things can get in the Spirit Blade universe. There will still be a cautionary note on the CD, however. On Spirit Blade, some of you may have noticed, we have it may be inappropriate for listeners under the age of 13. I don't know if it'll be the same age cautionary note. If anything, it would be a younger age that it would be inappropriate for. But we'll still have some kind of cautionary note on there. Because from the beginning, we've decided to make fiction that isn't always safe for every kind of family. I think that Spirit Blade is safe for a lot of families, but it's definitely not safe for every family. There are families that will be like, "Ooh, no, our kids are too young for this. It's not going to be right." And I absolutely respect that. And you know, so we're going to follow that with Pilgrim's Progress. We're going to keep to the same kind of standards. I'm totally getting off on what I actually wrote back to Isaac, so I'll just keep reading this. "When the Pilgrim's Progress gets scary, our story will become scary. So while we want to open the door a little wider for people to check us out, we'll be doing our best to stick to our slogan, unsterilized, unsafe, unleashed. Thanks for your words, prayer, and support, Isaac. It all means a lot to me." And I really do mean that. I believe that we've gotten as far as we have because of prayer support. And we heavily rely on God moving as a result of your prayers for what we're doing here. So please continue to pray for us. I absolutely agree with what Isaac said. We are going to be toning down the gore of our production for Pilgrim's Progress. There'll still be action, because there is action, and there is, if I remember correctly, I think there's a scene where there is some blood, but even when there's scenes with blood, it's going to be way toned down from Spirit Blade. But there's a difference between violence and action, and so it's still going to be amped up, and it's also got a lot of cerebral kind of concepts, so, you know, I'm... to some degree, it's too complex for kids anyway. I think they would get bored with some of the things that characters are talking about and whatnot. So But I think to adults, if you throw in some action and you handle these the issues that are brought up and stuff like that in a creative way, it'll be really, really kicking. So that's what we're hoping for. So anyway, I would love your thoughts on the Pilgrim's Progress adaptation that we have in the works, and who you think that we should market it more toward, or if it should be 50-50, or you know what you think would be, you know, a good philosophy to take on it if we want to attract a little bit more of that mainstream group for this particular production. So I'd love to hear from you on that. All right, plenty of time spent talking about that. That's way more time than I usually spend talking about stuff at Spirit Blade Productions. Let's go ahead and jump into our main feature. Okay, so first off, in Smallville news, a character named Davis Bloom is going to become a series regular on the show, and Comics to Film is wondering if that might be an alter ego for Doomsday. Davis Bloom, Doomsday. The character's going to be exploring the haunting mysteries of his true origins, and a darker truth begins to emerge. One of blood and serial murders. I'm just reading this off of Comics to Film. One of survival and utter destruction. One in which he is forced to confront the true evil inside of him. So, obviously from the tone of my voice, you can probably tell that I'm not really invested in this, and I'm already pretty much ready to mock it. If you've been listening to the show for a while, then you probably remember that I do not watch Smallville. I watched the first, I believe, 2.5 seasons, roughly, maybe 3 seasons, I can't remember, and lost interest. And most of my beef with the show is because it's too much like Dawson's Creek. It's like a teenage, you know, romance, stupid relationship, piece of crap type of thing. But one of the other things that bothers me about the show is that they're basically visiting everything about Superman's life before he becomes Superman. You know, I mean, they got the Justice League on there. He's meeting the Flash and Green Arrow and Cyborg and, you know, all these people. And now we're going to bring Doomsday on the show possibly. And, you know, Supergirl, it just doesn't end, you know? So my thought is, well, what's there left for him to do when he becomes Superman? And I know, you know, in all likelihood, they're not looking at spinning the show off into a Superman show, and that's fine. But still, something just doesn't feel right about having all this crap happen to him before he ever even becomes Superman. Just, geez, end the show, put him in a costume, or you know, I don't know. Probably putting him in a costume on Smallville is not the solution, but I don't know. End the show. I'm not watching it anyway, and in my opinion, is the only one that matters, right? All right, no. If you like Smallville, more power to you. That's one more thing you get to enjoy in life that I do not, so I do not begrudge you that. But it does nothing for me, and that's another, this Davis Bloom possibility of him being Doomsday is one more reason why. All right, Comics to Film has some cool G.I. Joe movie photos, and I'm talking about photos of cast members in their characters' costumes, and it looks really cool. They've got General Hawk, Duke, the Baroness, Destro, Snake Eyes, Shadow Storm, some other characters that I didn't... Oh, Scarlet. The other characters they had pictures of I didn't recognize as much. I wasn't a hardcore G.I. Joe fan, but I watched the cartoon when I was younger, when it was on, and I was able to watch it, you know, but I didn't, like, watch every single episode, so I don't know all the G.I. Joes. But it looked really cool, and even if you're just a fan of the animated series, the translation of the costumes... It comes through really nicely. I thought the Baroness had a really neat look, too. They remembered to give her the glasses. When I saw the glasses, I was like, oh, yeah, that's really just part of who that character is. So I'm really glad they kept that. Destro's picture, though, if you're looking for a, you know, Chrome Dome, you're going to be disappointed. I can only hope that at some point in the movie he will become Chrome Dome, because in this picture, it's just dude. He definitely has the look of Destro's face, I think, and he's got a head that is begging to be shaved, so I can see them making that transition. I can see him transitioning into Chrome Dome, but that's not what the picture is showing, so you'll be disappointed there. And no pictures of Cobra Commander, I am sorry to say. But you can check those out at www.comics2film.com. Cool website. I get a lot of my information there, including what they reported on May 5th. Marvel, they said, Marvel Today updated its feature film slate strategy and plans for the next 3 years, locking in key release windows for its character franchises. In order to focus its attention on maximizing the success of an Iron Man sequel and the launch of Thor in the summer of 2010, and because Marvel believes that the summer is the optimal time to launch a new property, the company will not release a self-produced film in 2009. Marvel plans, this is where it gets interesting, Marvel plans to launch its 2010 film slate with the release of the sequel, Iron Man 2, so that's just 2 years away, on April 30th, 2010, less than 2 years. Followed by the launch of Thor on June 4th, 2010. So another summer with two Marvel movies. That'll be cool. Additionally, Marvel is planting its feature film stakes for the summer of 2011, so that's the very next year, with an Avengers-themed summer. A two-picture project which will debut on May 6th, 2011, with The First Avenger, Captain America, that's the working title, followed by The Avengers in July 2011. It looks, if you've seen Iron Man, then you'll know what I'm talking about. It looks as though Marvel is working on creating a cohesive Marvel movie continuity, and I mentioned that briefly last week in my Iron Man review. And if the rumored crossover is supposed to happen of Iron Man characters or one character in the Hulk movie this summer, that will be pretty much confirmation. But I think, you know, with these announced film plans, I think there's probably no doubt that they're building up all these releases into an Avengers movie, and possibly an Avengers franchise. There's supposed to be an Ant-Man movie coming out starring the dude from Shaun of the Dead and the British dude. Well, they're both British, but the blonde, slimmer British dude. I don't know his name. I can't remember. It's on the net somewhere. But anyway, but he's going to be playing Ant-Man. So I'm wondering, you know, if they're going to tie that in too, if all the cast members will return and be involved in the Avengers movie. But I think that would be really cool, and I think hopefully it would give a cue to DC to kind of get their butts in gear and get proper control of their properties so that, you know, they can create a cohesive DC universe as well. I think it's a brilliant strategy on Marvel's part, and even though I'm a DC guy, I applaud them. I think it's a brilliant idea, and I can't wait to see it all come together. All right, on DarkHorizons.com, they report that a Donnie Darko sequel is underway. You may have not seen Donnie Darko. It's an interesting movie. I think I saw most of it when I rented it a while back on DVD. It kept, skipping and having weird issues and would skip, you know, a minute or two here and there, and so I had trouble watching it all the way through. So I can't vouch for the content, you know, if there's any, you know, obscene content or whatever in there that that might not be appropriate for everybody. But anyway, I thought it was a cool movie, you know, all I did see, which was most of it. You may enjoy it too. It's this weird kind of mental mind trip / parallel universe kind of thing. It's really, you know, it's cool stuff. And didn't do well in the box office, but it kind of is a cult hit on DVD. But they're making a Donnie Darko sequel, but it doesn't involve any of the original people. It doesn't involve the original writer, director. It only has basically one cast member carrying over, and that's Donnie's younger sister, who the plot will focus around. She and some friends are going to go on a trip to California and have trippy visions on the way there. So just reading kind of the description on Dark Horizons, it's like, oh boy, people that are digging Donnie Darko are not going to be liking this sequel, I don't think. It doesn't sound like they're making an effort to recreate or to, I should say, add to. You know, it looks like they're just trying to recreate and in a new package the same story or whatever, but it seems to be all about money on that one, so be warned. But you got a while. There's no release date listed, I don't think. Gore Verbinski of Pirates of the Caribbean and The Ring is attached to direct and produce BioShock, a film adaptation of the highly acclaimed best-selling Xbox 360 video game for Universal Pictures. The Aviator and Sweeney Todd scribe John Logan is in talks to pen the screenplay, though no release date is even being targeted. Verbinski said he plans to start pre-production as soon as Logan's script is finished and approved by all involved. So, if you are a big fan of BioShock, get excited, because hopefully it is only a matter of time, and it'll be done well. That's all for movie news this time.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
doctrine will set you free.
Okay, today we're searching for truth in Galatians chapter 4. We're going to finish the chapter this week, 21 through 31 are the verses we're looking at. But before we continue with this chapter, I want you to take a look at the following passages of Scripture to get a basic understanding of the metaphor Paul is using. Write these down, take a look at them, and then pause your podcast and come on back. You're looking at Genesis 12, 1 through 4, Genesis 15, 3 through 5, Genesis 16, 1 through 5, Genesis 18, 10 through 14, and Genesis 21, 1 through 13. And then, of course, don't forget to read Galatians 4, 21 through 31. So hopefully you're checking that out with us every week, the scripture that we're on, because otherwise I'm just a dude blabbing and you're missing out on the actual words of God. You don't want to miss that. So assuming that you've taken some time to check out the stuff in Genesis, that'll give you the backdrop for the metaphor Paul's using here. In these verses, the Genesis verses, God promised Abraham that his bloodline would become, quote, a great nation, and that all nations would be blessed somehow because of him. Now, while the Jewish people are descendants of Abraham and God used them to reveal himself to the world, this prophecy ultimately comes true through Jesus. Jesus is a descendant of Abraham and has made it possible for anyone from any nation or culture to have forgiveness and a relationship with the God of the universe. Now, that is a huge blessing. That's what you call blessing every nation through Abraham. Abraham and his wife Sarah were both old in the Genesis verses, and so Sarah tried to help out God, because they hadn't had a kid yet. So she was going to try and help out God by telling Abraham to sleep with her servant, whom Paul calls the slave woman in the NIV translation, so she could give him an heir instead, because they're looking at this situation like, okay, well, Abraham, you know, he's going to bless all nations because of, you know, his descendants, so I don't see how that's going to happen when he didn't have any descendants. But, you know, this only complicated matters. Him sleeping with the slave woman, and it was just a bonehead decision for Abraham to even agree to that. Sarah's idea was a bonehead decision, so it was just bad ideas all around, and it just resulted in complication and brought about conflict. God ultimately did allow Sarah to become pregnant with Abraham's child, and the descendants of this child became the Jewish nation of Israel. That's where we got Israel. So now we pick up things at Galatians 4:21, where Paul uses this historical event to illustrate his point about the legalists. And we remember that legalists are those who give too much importance to the law. So he's using this historical event to illustrate his point about the legalists that had been influencing the Galatian Christians and trying to convince them that they need to be more into obeying, and that is connected possibly to salvation. Paul says that the slave woman, this is where the metaphor picks up, the slave woman Hagar represents Mount Sinai. And Mount Sinai is where the law was given to Moses, just as a little footnote there. So she represents the law that was given to Moses, and that her children, like her, will be slaves. Sarah used Hagar to try and fulfill God's promise on her own, much like we so naturally try to earn approval with God through our actions. But like Sarah's plan to use Hagar, our efforts are always going to fall short. Paul says he also says that Hagar is like Jerusalem as it was at that time and as it still is today. Like the rest of the world, Jerusalem isn't unique in this, but like the rest of the world, Jerusalem is filled with people in spiritual and moral slavery without Jesus. Slaves that must obey God's law perfectly, which is an impossible task, in order to be free. The concept now of a Jerusalem, the Jerusalem that is above, refers to an ideal Jerusalem in heaven that will one day come to earth. We see that in Revelation 21, verse 2. Paul quotes Isaiah 54, 1, where the prophet gives comfort to the exiled Jews, promising that they will be restored to glory and live in peace. Paul says that this Jerusalem of the future, inhabited by free people, is the metaphorical mother of those who trust in Jesus. So, to sum up Paul's point, we might say that those who try to do things their own way or try to earn favor with God will be slaves to the endless pursuit of perfection and will not inherit what God has for us. Those who trust in Jesus are free from that burden and will gain everything God has promised. Paul explains that like the slave child of Hagar, Genesis 21:9, check that out really quick, the legalists are doing harm to the true Christians. He also strongly implies that the legalists should be removed from the church community because of their behavior. You can check that out, see what you think for yourself. Verses 29 and 30 are where we see that implication there. Trying to earn good standing with God can really seem like the right way to go. In fact, we sometimes feel good when we do good. Not always. Sometimes doing the right thing, you know, really feels like crap. But sometimes we feel good. We get a sense of, I don't want to say pride, but we just feel good when we do good. And God absolutely wants us to obey Him and do what is right. He absolutely wants that. But He wants us to obey Him and do what's right out of our love for Him, not out of a burden of obligation or an effort to get on His good side or to appear to be a good Christian to people around us. You know, He wants us to do it purely out of love for Him. Jesus has carried that burden, and by the burden of perfection and doing everything right, He's carried that burden. And by trusting in that, that's how we get on God's, quote, good side. God wants us to serve Him freely, without this burden and this constant sense of guilt and failure. He wants us to serve Him freely, and that can only happen if we are completely trusting in Jesus for our good standing with God. Anything less, and we become slaves to a list of do's and don'ts and guilt and failure, and we miss out on all that God has for us. All right, the coffeehouse question this week. Expanding on Paul's slave metaphor, what do you think a person who tries to earn God's love by following the rules has in common with a slave? Think about that metaphor. Get creative. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And next week, what's this? Paul wants men to cut off their wah? We'll find out what's going on in Galatians chapter 5 next week. Okay, that's it for this week. As always, I want to hear from you. Send me an email at Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R, at spiritblade.net, or use the microphone on your computer to record me a message, and I'll play it on the podcast over at pater.libsyn.com or patersbrain.blogspot.com. Give me a review of your own on something you think is cool, or tell me something you liked or didn't like about the show, or some point you agree or disagree with me on. I would love to hear from you, especially about that Pilgrim's Progress stuff. I'd really like your input on that as I'm praying through that and trying to make that decision over the course of the next few months. Also, I hope that you guys all do well if you're in school and you got finals and whatnot coming up or in the midst of them right now. Just hang in there. Hang in there for a little bit longer. And everybody else that summer doesn't mean anything to and you have to keep working and everything stays exactly the same. It just gets hotter. Sorry, I'm in the same boat with you. Except I really, really love what I do. Hopefully you do too. Anyway, that's all I've got for this week. I have no idea what's coming up next week, but I'm going to be doing an interview of the creator of J.S. Earls, who is the writer on Pistol Fist. He's a Christian comic book writer, and the series is coming out this summer. July 4th is when the first issue is released. I'll give you some more info about that when we on the episode that we have an interview with him. I think that's going to be about 2 weeks out from now. I don't think it's next week. I think it's the week after or something like that. But I'll keep you posted on that. But that'll be a really cool guest to have on the show here. So stay tuned and stick with us for that. In the meantime, have a wonderful week. I hope that God gives you opportunities to serve Him, to love Him, and to do what He's put you on this planet to do. And I hope during all that time, you keep busy seeking the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Grief Factor is awesome. Plater is a crazy freak.